morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're following up on openly gay football player Michael Sam's same-sex kiss on national television. Not just any television, mind you. National sports television. Last week, we asked KCUR listeners whether the NFL was ready for Michael Sam, and not a single person in our listening area called in to say no. In a country that sees the Midwest as perhaps a final frontier for gay rights and gay acceptance, in a state that just 10 years ago changed its constitution to define marriage as a strictly heterosexual institution, we'll talk about how the Midwest is, and maybe isn't, changing its perception of gay identity. In a moment, we'll turn to in-studio guest Tom Poe to discuss the state of gay acceptance in the Midwest. But first, let's get a sports perspective on the issue from Victor Wishna, who you usually hear on A Fan's Notes on Up to Date. Hi, Victor.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am well, and I'm honored to be invited to be part of this conversation.
Well, let's get started by talking about how this is playing within the national sports community, one that I admittedly am not super ingrained in myself. How would you describe the conversation around what was essentially an event in sports television?
Well, I mean, I think, and you can feel free to disagree with me, but I think media is often drawn to controversy, and I think that's especially true for sports media where, you know, I'll be honest, and it's mostly making up stuff to talk about. And I say that proudly, not in a demeaning way. It's sports is entertainment, and so sports media is entertainment news. And there are themes and issues that transcend sports, I think, which is why sports resonates with so many millions of people. But still, most of the stories are in how they are being told. So the latest installment of the Michael Sam story after he was drafted, I think it's telling that much of the discussion has been not so much about whether he, you know, belongs in the NFL or as you were just saying, whether people are ready for him as much as focusing in on the spontaneous but televised kiss, you know, that he shared with his boyfriend when he was drafted. First of all, I will say it's not common for TV cameras to be in the living room of someone who's being drafted in the last round.
That isn't common?
Not the seventh round. Usually it's the top. My point being that the reason that it was national news was because of who he was and that he had declared himself, you know, openly gay. And there was some, you know, as I was saying before, some controversy about that moment, you know, on the sports talk radio channels, or you know, things like, oh, why do they have to do that? Why my kids are watching. You know, why do they have to flaunt that? And of course, no one has a problem when national figures flaunt their heterosexuality with a simple kiss, right? Because it's not considered flaunting. But more importantly, you know, who makes their kid watch the seventh round of the NFL draft? I mean, these are mostly players who will be fighting to make their team's practice squads next year. So the idea that they were hyping up, this moment above and beyond what it was from a sports perspective, which I think does raise one point that I think in most of it has been celebratory, right, about that this has been a wonderful thing, or as you were saying, not a single one of your listeners called in to say that either they or the league wasn't ready for this moment to come. And so it was a big deal. It was an important first. But, there is the point that Michael Sam is an incredible football player. He was the defensive player of the year in the Southeastern Conference, which is basically like being the MVP of the NFL's minor league. I mean, it's considered one of the best conferences in college football, certainly the best defensive conference. And he still was drafted in the seventh and final round. So obviously there were some teams who were either concerned, you know, internally or for their fan bases, or for whatever reason, were not willing to take that quote unquote chance until the St. Louis Rams, who were very open about the fact that they got an incredible deal. You know, there is speculation that if he had not been openly gay, he would have been drafted much, much higher.
Well, let's back up a little bit before we resume that part of the story. Michael Sam came out in February, and that was national news. But do you have a sense, first of all, of whether he was already out on his college campus among friends here in Columbia, Missouri? I've read that he came out nationally in response to members of the media wanting to break the story, meaning that they already knew of it.
Right. And from what I understand, he was, you know, he had been out to his family and he had been out to his teammates and his coaches before that, before the 2013 college football season began. And when it did become, when it did come out as a national story, you know, his teammates and his coaches were right there to talk about how they had always known and how much they supported him. And I think that's a telling aspect of this, of how this has unfolded as well, because, you know, looking back in hindsight, you know, Missouri went on in 2013 to have an incredibly unexpectedly successful season, one of the best football seasons in the school's recent memory. They made it to the SEC title game, a conference that they were only playing in their second year, and as I said before, considered the premier conference in college football. And of course, Sam was the defensive player of the year. And so that all happened, you know, we'd find out later, that all happened with his entire locker room and staff already, him being openly gay to them. So I guess it was not that much of a distraction.
Yeah.
And so I think it's, yeah.
Well, and how did Mizzou fans react to this news back in February?
Yeah, well, when in February, when it did become a national story, I mean, one thing that I do remember, you know, of course, I'm sorry to mention their name and give them airtime, but the Westboro Baptist Church planned a protest at a Mizzou basketball game, at which, you know, Michael Sam was going to be present immediately after his announcement. And you probably remember the media reports at the time that several thousand students and other community members came out and lined the street to the arena to block what was probably just a handful of protesters. And then when he was introduced at the game and his image was put up on the scoreboard video, he got a standing ovation from the entire arena. So, again, I think that's kind of been the theme of this story, is that it's newsworthy because it's a first, but I don't think it's going to be a quote-unquote problem.
Well, thank you so much, Victor Wishna. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and we really appreciate that perspective you bring.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm happy to share.
Victor Wishna is a commentator who appears on Up to Date regularly, and you can hear him on their A Fan's Notes series. Tom Poe, professor of communication studies at UMKC, you have been involved in LGBT issues here in Kansas City for the last 35 years. Now, this is a national story, but it's happening here in Missouri. 35 years ago, would you have predicted that?
Not at all. And in fact, if you just talk to anyone in the LGBT community, I think our head is swimming, perhaps even more than sort of the regular population, about just not being able to anticipate that after particularly decades and decades and decades of sort of slogging our way through sort of these issues around acceptance, that just then suddenly it's like a dam breaking. The metaphor that I oftentimes use is that it's almost just as if there's a dam that is sort of backing up either a river or a lake. And it just takes drop by drop of sort of sweat and oftentimes tears that just keep adding up to the water level. And then it just suddenly at some point, the water just breaches the dam and the dam breaks and a whole valley is suddenly sort of filled with kind of life-giving water. So I think for LGBT people, that's what particularly the last, I won't even say 10 years, maybe the last 5 years, and in some ways just within the last year, that it just seems like you're waking up on a different planet.
Describe what you mean by the last 5 years and the last year. What distinguishes those periods of time?
You know, I'm not sure. We know from polling that the big change has really taken place in the last 10 years. And I think that 10-year mark is that just, I think it was Saturday, was marked the 10th anniversary of the Massachusetts ruling allowing marriage equality. Up until that time, there just was no examples that anyone could look at to see, well, what were going to be the sort of impact. Was it going to be the destruction of sort of marriage as we know it? We now have, in fact, those 10 years. And in fact, states also like Iowa here in the Midwest, since we're talking about not liberal Massachusetts, but changes of attitudes right here. It's now been a number of years that Iowa had marriage equality. And I think that what a new generation is waking up to is that it didn't seem to have any great impact or effect on anyone else's lives. And that's where, well, what was the big deal?
Well, what hasn't changed in the last 5 years, the last year? Are there still things that you, because with all this attention given to how much acceptance has increased, are there still parts of that dam, so to speak, that have yet to come down?
Oh, yes. And here's what's really, I think, problematic and difficult about this whole subject. And it probably goes to the reaction of listeners to, say, the Michael Sam story. Because, of course, KCR is not totally, but largely is an urban station, and your reach is in a part of the state that, in fact, identifies with the sort of Kansas City metropolitan area. While politics is statewide, and this is where we see, I think, the difference, say, in Jeff City or, in fact, in the state of Kansas, too. We all go under the one state title, like Missouri, but in fact, there's two totally different states of mind that make up the Midwest. So I think that what we're seeing, of course, more and more, is that there's just really two different worlds in the Midwest. You have, in fact, sort of the urban parts of the state where it is probably at this point largely not a big deal. But you wouldn't have to go very far into the outer areas of the Midwest. Certainly, my mother lives down in the Ozarks, my sister in Arkansas, and we'd be having a very different discussion, I think, if we were discussing the same topic. And you'd be getting very different kinds of call-ins and responses from the audience. So I think that's just where we are at this point. The good news, though, is that more than anything, all polling shows it's more generational even than geographic. And that's where I think folks that have been fighting for LGBT sort of issues are really encouraged, is that just all the signs show that it really is, more than anything else, a generational change.
What do you think are the significant milestones in that change? Can you point to a few, even locally?
I don't know if they're milestones, but I'll give you some anecdotal evidence of it. When I first got involved in LGBT issues here in Kansas City, there was a small group that felt that there was a need to set up a suicide prevention line, particularly for our LGBT youth. And so it was going to be called Gay Talk, where you could just call and get sort of help or be told someplace to go. Trying to get that into the Kansas City phone book ended up becoming really controversial. They didn't want to print, in fact, a telephone number that had the word gay identified with it. That was 30 years ago. That was really controversial. This weekend, I went to UMKC's big sort of what they call Lavender Graduation, which is a banquet that had like 100 people that represented deans, officials, all sort of giving out LGBT scholarships and honors. And Saturday night here in Kansas City, I helped sort of volunteered for Passages, which is the LGBT youth support group, had their spring prom, and it was hosted in the Fellowship Hall of Trinity United Methodist Church. Those are the kinds of things that 30 years ago would have seemed unbelievable, but now aren't even controversial.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with Tom Poe about Michael Sam's nationally televised same-sex kiss, but also about how that is a relevant story because he's from Missouri and that this is happening in the Midwest, and how is gay acceptance changing within the Midwest? You can call us at 816-235-2888 if you'd like to chime in on this conversation. We've also got someone on the line who we'll speak with in just a moment about a billboard campaign that's going on in Kansas City, but in other cities too. It's for a clothing brand called Love is Equality. But before we talk to the fellow on the phone, I'd like Tom Poe, Do you think it's interesting that a clothing brand called Love is Equality that has a billboard campaign that it depicts same-sex couples, do you think it's interesting that out of 10 cities they've chosen to advertise in really prominently that Kansas City made that list?
I do find that really fascinating, so I'll be eager to sort of hear what someone from the company says about that. Certainly, though, politically, right now, kind of the big push, and it makes perfectly good sense, that it's going to be the Midwest and the South. That, in fact, these things both are controversial but also get noticed. If I were a marketing person, I would certainly pick those areas where an advertisement like that's going to get talked about on a radio program, which would not be the case for that same sign in Manhattan or L.A. or San Francisco. So it'll be interesting if that had anything sort of perhaps to do with those decisions.
Well, Timothy in Orlando, Florida, tell us about that decision. Tell us about the decision to do a billboard campaign in Kansas City.
I mean, Kansas City was a very controversial market for us, and we figured that we would, you know, give it a shot and see how it would go. And I mean, of course, you know, our brand is all about, you know, fighting for equal rights and standing up for equality and love and acceptance. And not only that, but, you know, growing up in a small town, because I'm actually was born and raised in Tennessee, it was a very, very interesting, you know, time coming out. And I had an extremely hard time coming out. And so, you know, I wanted to kind of put the message out there, and Kansas City just kind of chose that, you know, made it to that list. And not only that, but, you know, the whole thing with the Kansas trying to do the Don't Say Gay bill, I believe it was, that, of course, didn't get passed. That also had something to do with us choosing Kansas City as one of our markets. And, I mean, you know, granted, it's not as large as some of the other markets that we are in, but at the same time, I think it's made a huge impact on the market. And, you know, and it's great seeing what kind of response that we have been receiving from Kansas City, as, along with all the other states that, you know, Love is Equality has billboards in.
Tell us about that response.
I mean, we've had a, you know, a great positive response from some people. We've also had a few negative responses from our Facebook page, as you could probably notice at loveisequal.org. So, I mean, you know, we've also had some people saying that they don't want to see two dudes banging on a billboard in Nashville, which I don't really think we have two dudes banging on a billboard with two guys kissing. But, I mean, I guess each and every person has their perspective on the boards. And then, of course, we've had a few people from Kansas City even posting on Facebook saying, hey, it's great seeing, you know, this kind of, you know, billboard in our hometown, in my hometown. And, of course, I've had some people messaging and saying, hey, take the billboard down. I don't want to see two dudes kissing right outside my front door. So, I mean, you know, it's been a mixture of both. But I would honestly say that we've probably had more good feedback than we have bad. And at the end of the day, it's to create awareness about the brand as well as about equality, because, you know, love is love regardless whether you're gay or straight or, you know, or even heterosexual or, you know, whatever. It doesn't really matter, lesbian or not, or straight or gay. Everybody is all the same, and love is love regardless.
Well, thanks so much, Timothy. And that was Timothy of Love is Equality, a clothing brand. Tom Poe, this does get to issues having to do with portrayals of gay relationships in the culture more broadly. And you are an expert in film, and I'm wondering about portrayals on television and in film, and what the Michael Sam kiss, what him being a football player does to maybe shift that portrayal.
Absolutely. I think that's what is so fascinating. And in fact, Vice President ended up talking about what he called the Will and Grace effect in his explanation of why he thought there'd been such total change. If we now just have a generation that has been raised on these representations within the media. Boy, when Ellen came out, that was such a big deal. And now, in fact, just this week, Modern Family's big two-part sort of season finale is the gay couple's big wedding. So these representations now are everywhere. What I found so fascinating about the whole Sam thing is the kiss was so talked about everywhere, the kiss seen around the world, but only because, in fact, it was on ESPN. If you watch daytime television, the soap operas now have same-sex couples that are just kissing 5 days a week. So in prime time, daytime, in fact, I think one of the things which interests me as sort of a historian in regards to pop culture, you know, daytime television is where all the most adult discussions and representations goes on in the world of television. Evening television is much tamer than daytime television. So the whole issue was that it was, in fact, on ESPN. And so it was the last sort of bastion of kind of macho sort of pop culture. So that was where the news was. The kiss wouldn't be news if it wasn't an NFL draft choice. And in fact, ESPN was smart because the ratings were sky high for the seventh round of the draft. There wouldn't be any other reason for, in fact, they're making so much sort of cash on high ratings by playing the story up and making it as big as possible. The one thing, though, I think is real important to get into this whole discussion is that while those media representations, I think, are crucially important, all of the polling shows it's not the most important reason for changes and why the changes are even pretty much the same whether you are politically kind of conservative, whatever your religious sort of background is. This is the important statistic. Back in 2003, so we're talking about these last 10 years, 22% of people polled reported that they had a friend or family member who was gay. Today, 10 years later, it was above 65%. That's where the real difference has come. Harvey Milk always said if people would come out, in fact, so that it would be a community that could be seen, people would all find out they have been living sort of next door and working with LGBT people or had them in their family all along.
Let's hear from Brana and Lee Summit. Hi, Brana.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good.
What
well,
can you share?
I was trying to say Michael being drafted as a human being, he should be given all the chances to show his talents, show what he is. Maybe in his lifetime, the money he'll make, he'll do something good for someone. But, you know, the more we talk about him on radio shows, in the papers and all this, it's like promoting gayism. We don't want to promote that gayism because that's not right. But what he is, he is. I'm not against that. But we don't want to give a message to our kids that it's okay to be gay and you can be a hero one day.
Well, let's get Tom Poe's reaction to that. How do you feel when you hear someone making those kinds of distinctions?
Well, I can understand and I guess I can't say I can appreciate those sort of attitudes, but they're understandable. So I'm not really sure how one responds. I think one thing that we can all agree on is, boy, we'd like to see the day where, in fact, we wouldn't be, in fact, constantly talking about LGBT issues. I can understand why people would feel like that it's being pushed into their face. But that's always been true in regards to any kind of culture, social change. That's what I think this movement does have in common with past battles in regards to racial equality or gender equality. I can remember where, in fact, feminists were all seen as constantly just pushing sort of feminism in everyone's face. So I don't know how to respond, except that I think that that's what we call history.
Well, Tom, you know, as far as history goes, we do have a question from Mike in Overland Park who wants to know if you think that the more radical elements of the LGBT movement delayed the advancement of the movement or if they were a critical part of it.
I think they were a critical part. And I think that, again, since we're talking about just how movements operate within history, you know, Stonewall is sort of the celebrated sort of beginning of kind of the modern gay rights movement. And it famously was started by a group of drag queens. And that they were the ones that made these issues visible, that the media picked up on. Now we move to where it's Michael Sam and the NFL.
Well, tell us, first of all, about Stonewall, just in case people don't know what that was.
Well, yes. Back at the very beginning of the 70s, it was a police raid on this gay club in New York City, where they arrested, in fact, a group of folks, and they were predominantly drag performers, and so they would be photographed being put into paddy wagons. The New York Times just barely covered the story with what today would be such an offensive headline. Bar raided, Queen Bee's fighting mad.
Wow.
That was the actual New York Times insulting, sort of making a joke about the whole thing.
Wow. Well, you know, what do you think is the role that the Midwest has to play in this national dialogue right now? Because like we said, this is all happening with respect to Michael Sam here in Missouri, and we're sitting here in Kansas City. Does the Midwest have a special role to play in this dialogue?
Culturally, the Midwest, in fact, sort of, I think, symbolizes to the rest of the culture that we are the new normal. In fact, that whole thing about if it plays in Peoria, and I think advertisers, everyone just sort of has always kind of looked to the Midwest as sort of being the representation of the real America. And so changes in the Midwest sort of really mark sort of the change in the real America. I think that because Michael Sam's played for Mizzou, he became a part of the Missouri family, and that's why those students were all out there to support him. He wasn't just the gay football player. He's a member of our team.
Well, we've run out of time for today's conversation with Tom Poe about the state of gay acceptance, particularly here in the Midwest. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thanks.
Central Standard is going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll meet with the Cash Money crew to talk about paying for a college education. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back.